Let's talk about the difference between limerence and love. Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
All right, let's do that, Tyler. But before we do, let's hear a really nice review that we got recently. It says, I feel seen and heard. I've been meaning to write a review for a while, and Tyler's touching episode on making amends reminded me. I am the betrayed spouse, and I've subscribed to a dozen podcasts dealing with infidelity. However, the Therapy Brothers are my favorite. Brandon and Tyler, she called me Brandon, which, by the way, I'm used to anyway, so people can call me Brandon, whatever, except for you, Tyler. Brandon and Tyler are phenomenal together. These men just get it. I feel so validated when I listen to them. I wish my husband would listen, too. I think he would appreciate the caring, non-judgmental manner in which Tyler and Brandon speak to unfaithful partners. If you're looking for actionable advice in healing yourself and your marriage, I highly recommend the Therapy Brothers podcast. I look forward to every episode. Thank you, Tyler and Brandon, for putting your heart and soul into helping couples through this traumatic experience.
That's awesome. Thank you for reaching out and sharing those sentiments and those thoughts. We love having you here with us.
That was awesome. That was really nice. I got to say about the Brandon thing. I get called Brandon so much. Like, I wish mom and dad would have just stuck a D in my name. Because I get called Brandon so much. And it doesn't bother me. I just roll with it. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm Brandon. But you were auto-texting one day. And you texted like, yeah, I think Brandon. And I was like, no. Like, people can call me Brandon, but not Tyler.
It was one of those voice text things, and I think I did it like 30 times. I don't think it was one time thing.
I about like, jumped through the phone.
I'd talk into the phone and be like, yeah, let's go hang out with Brandon or whatever, but it would autocorrect to Brandon, but I wouldn't check it. So it's like just like rubbing salt in the wound without even knowing it. And finally you text me back and you're like, if you say Brandon one more time, I'm gonna drive up to your house and punch
your
you in the face. I've since corrected my course on that, except for the fact that sometimes autocorrect might not still get it, but
I appreciate it. I feel like something like that.
Well let's jump into it, Brandon. We got a couple of questions that just kind of came simultaneously with one another, and I think there's enough overlap that we're just going to read both of these questions and then have a discussion about the difference between limerence and love, what limerence is first, and then have a discussion about limerence and love. So here's the first. Okay. I'm just read both questions. Is that okay?
Yeah. I mean, can I just make one comment? The word limerence, like, I think it's perfect right now. It sounds really kind of St. Patrick Day to me. I don't know why. Like limerence.
Limerence. It sounds like a leprechaun supposed to say it.
Something. Yeah. You know,
we're filming a week before St. Patty's Day.
So. Yeah, it's very timely, but some people may have never heard of limerence. So
yeah,
they can learn today with us, and yeah, let's get into it.
All right. So two questions. I'll read the questions, then we'll get into it. So first one, I have a question about limerence in love passion. Is it all bad? It seems that there are positives and negatives. Can you achieve the positives without the negatives? I had been waiting, hoping for even a scrap of limerent energy most of our 25-year marriage. I convinced myself that my husband wasn't a romantic, passionate person. During his affair, he became a person that I believed he was not capable of being. He wrote poems, love letters, took entire days off work to have sex all day at hotels, sexted and fantasized about her, put in a lot of effort for their dates. I understand that most of it was based on selfish consumption of each other and the role of being forbidden played in that excitement. But I find myself still hoping and wishing to experience that kind of energy, the passion, excitement, effort, cherishing, etc., without the consumption and selfishness. It isn't something you can make someone feel for you. Do I keep waiting or learn to live without it? So that's the first one. And then this second one came in right behind it. Says, hey, Tyler and Brandon, first I want to say how much I love and appreciate your podcast. As both a betrayed partner and a counseling student, I get so much out of your content and truly love both of your therapy styles. You're both so inspiring to me. My question for you both is, how do I get the warm, fuzzy feelings back for my husband after many years of chronic infidelity? He's in good recovery and hasn't had any slips or relapses for over a year. He's so present, so doting and loving, and I'm over here wanting to embrace it and appreciate it, but I'm feeling kind of numb and detached at times. He got into good recovery pretty quickly after my first discoveries of his infidelities, but there were so many trickle discoveries over the course of a year that I think it burnt me out. I've also never been in a relationship with a healthy man before, so this is new and unfamiliar to me too. I love him and our family, but I'm afraid those strong feelings I once had won't return.
Yeah, so you hear both sides of it in those questions. On one hand, you hear the one person saying, I want my husband to get close to me, obsess about me, like create this limerent energy with me. The other side you hear, my husband seems to be doing the right things. Recovery's been kind of quick and short-lived, but I don't know if I want to get too close.
It's almost right? Like I think what she's saying is I want to know if it's possible to get some of that energy back towards him because right. He's doing the right things now, but I'm so guarded now. I don't know if I want to open myself up to that same kind of energy that I once had.
Right. I think the first question, to back up a little bit, Tyler, the first question kind of gives some good examples of limerence. And but what's interesting is I don't think that's what she's really wanting. I think she's actually wanting love and passion, which is different than limerence. And so if we can differentiate between the two, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's back all the way up and actually just do a quick definition of limerence. And then we can get into the discussion about limerence and love and passion and all of that. So the definition of limerence is the state of being infatuated or obsessed with another person. Typically this is experienced involuntarily and characterized by a strong desire for reciprocation of your feelings, maybe not necessarily sexually. So basically, it's that infatuated, Twitter-pated stage of you know, falling in love and being obsessed with another person.
Yeah, this is one reason why affairs are so appealing to some people, is because it opens up that limerent energy into you again, which is, wow, this is new. It's exciting. I'm obsessed about this new person and this new thing. And so another definition here, it says an obsession that consumes a limerent person's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. It usually involves two people, the person who desires the other, the limerent, and the desired person, the limerent's object. Isn't that interesting? Right at the end there.
The limerent's object.
Yep. And so I think limerence and lust are our best friends, very closely connected. And so that lustful, limerent energy of obsessing after somebody or being obsessed after is natural inside of us. We actually like it. It stimulates a lot of dopamine release and excitement. And so we desire that. We want that. And when we've been married for a long time and we're dealing with poopy diapers and paying the bills, that energy of being obsessed about each other can start to die. That limerent energy can really go away in a relationship.
Yeah, I think in many relationships, I would say more often than not, the way that people end up together is they fall madly in love with each other, in quotes, which is they become Twitter-pated with one another,
mm-hmm.
right? And that Twitter-pation is like, I'm sitting at work and all I can think about is being with her. I'm sitting at school and all I want to do is think about what we're going to do for the date that night. And it fuels us, and it's this really like passionate kind of energy. I think for me, where it becomes a struggle is that in those definitions is that somebody else has to be the object of that, and it's also compulsive. And to me, those things don't actually line up with what I think love is. I would say there's a difference between that limerent energy, even though it feels enticing, and a lot of us want that. We actually want to be the object sometimes. Mm-hmm. We want somebody to think about us and care about
us. You could hear that in that question.
Yeah, right? In one of those questions, that's what she's wanting. She's like, man, now I know he's capable of this energy. He put it all into this affair partner, but he's never like shown it to me. Like, and if she's not careful, she's going to end up having that kind of affect how she defines herself too. Like, what's wrong with me? Why wasn't I good enough? It's not that he's not capable. It's that he didn't do it with me. Something's wrong.
I want to be desired. I'm not desired.
So, that's it. And that's what I hear that I think is all of us. We love to be desired. We want to be desired. We want to be chosen. We want to be cherished. But limerent energy seems more in line with self-consumption. I'm going to over-pursue you for my sake rather than I'm going to love you passionately for our sake, for your sake and my sake.
Okay, it sounds like there's a few options here, like to have a limerence in a relationship. Hell, the more I say that word,
it feels a little bit codependent to me.
Yeah. So I can have this kind of lustful, carnal, just obsession that is passionate and great sex and whatever, right? Versus a long-term relationship, marriage, that the passion's kind of died. You're working together as a partner on life. And neither one of you feels that desired, right? Is there a third option, which is we have commitment, we have trust, and we have love. And so we both really desire to be close to each other and connected on an intimate level, which feels really good to connect and to nurture that relationship, to work on that relationship, and feel that deep sense of love together.
Right. So part of the question was, is it okay to have some of that passionate energy? Is it okay to want to go and run away to a hotel with each other for a day and like whatever? Of course that's okay, if it also has other parts to it. Right. Yeah. And that's what I think we're maybe getting at here. And I'm thinking, Brannon, is, you know, I always fall back on this theory of the triangular theory of love, and it says, you know, there's three components of love that you might say, and you've got your passionate love, you have your intimacy or friendship liking kind of love, and then you have your loyalty, we're never leaving each other, ride or die kind of love. And if you have just the passionate love, that's called fatuous love, which is, it's actually empty love. It's like, it's really fun, but it doesn't have the substance of real love. And if you have just the loyalty love, then that's an empty love, because we don't really like each other and we don't have any passion, but we're sticking it out forever. We'll just live in hell together for the next 30 years. Or you have the friendship kind of love only, which is just friendship, where we really enjoy one another's company. We know a lot about each other, but we don't have the passion or the commitment. That's its own form of empty love. But when you pair those three things together, when you pair passion up with friendship and liking, with security, stability, loyalty, then you have something called consummate love. And consummate love does include passion. It's not objectification kinds of love.
Okay, so what it still is, like physical attraction and sexual desire and all of those things are still passionate love.
Yes.
That's not, limerence doesn't hold the, like that doesn't own that. But it's interesting, the second question that we asked, Tyler, because when you're going through, what'd you call it? The complete love, the
consummate
one, there's all consummate love. I'm kind of hearing in that question that she wants that, but she doesn't have it. So there's something missing there because of the infidelity, because of the betrayal and the broken trust. He's now showing up as a partner that that she thinks can create that consummate love, but there's a missing piece. There's been a lack of commitment in the relationship.
Yes.
So then her heart's not like, okay, let's bust open right now and go get as close to him as we possibly can, because there's a missing piece to that love that she has.
Right. And I think, you know, we're reading between the lines because we don't have her to talk with right now, right. But you can see how those things are linked together, that a breach in the actual loyalty part of their love has caused her to put self-protection around the passion part of that. Because if she were to feel passionate love there, that would be risky. That would be vulnerable.
It's right.
And in her situation, she's only a year into the recovery process. It kind of makes sense that even though she's seeing good signs and she's feeling like, hey, things are going in the right direction, that there's going to be a little bit of a governor that she has even subconsciously on opening up to that part again, because she's worried about getting burned again in the loyalty area. And so as the trust gets restored in the relationship, that will actually help over time. But then also something else happens in a situation like this where she's been betrayed. She's now got her own recovery that she's working. There's been that trauma. There's been the breach of trust. But then oftentimes there's this internal process work that goes on too, which is you sort of like feel like you lose a sense of yourself or parts of your identity. And as you go through your own personal recovery process, if you have those kinds of emotional shifts back into knowing who you are, the more fully you come to know who you are, the easier it is to open yourself up to those potential places of vulnerability again.
Okay. Right. And that's the tricky thing with betrayal, because as you get to know who you are, you trust your gut. You want to get close in a relationship. You want that passion back, but you really got to be honest with yourself as to whether your partner is trustworthy to do that or not. And you might be acting in a way that seems like you're just pushing against and scared and pushing away. But you're acting that way because you're acting in your truth. And so there's this, we call it the messy middle, where you're just kind of testing it out. Like, how safe am I in order to have this passion, in order to have this intimacy? And it's interesting, Tyler, with these two questions, you can hear both sides of the spectrum a little bit of, you know, and again, we're reading between the lines, what's healthier? If I want infatuation and obsession, and so I go back to my partner who's had an affair and I want him to invite me to the hotel room and sext with me and like do all of those things and just obsess over me. Okay. There's that side of the fence, right? Versus I've been burned, I've been hurt, and I don't know if I want you to get, like, I got this 10-foot pole that like is always here. Even if you desire me big time, like, no, thank you, buddy. Like, back off. I'm not willing to take a step toward you. I don't want to show you any bit of my vulnerability or even sexuality or whatever. Like, so what's healthy, Tyler? And you just kind of described it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where we're getting to is to the first question that we read. I want to make sure I'm crystal clear that I think it's fine that she desires those things in the sense that she wants to have passion. She wants to have fun with that. She wants for there to be creativity and pursuit and all of those things. There's nothing wrong with any of that. Right. So I want to be clear that that's not what we're
Absolutely.
Saying. Right. They're best paired up when they're included with the other parts of love. So if we have a relationship, and maybe the first question is, In a certain sense, we have a long-term relationship where there's loyalty and there's definitely some intimacy in the sense of we know each other really well, but the passion sucks. Okay. Well, where are you going to put your work at? You're going to continue to grow in your own self-confidence, and you're going to realize that if you're still safe in the relationship, then you need to lean yourself into that passion. And he would hopefully do the same as part of the discussions that you're having with each other. Right. In the second question, she's saying, I'm not even sure I want that yet. And I would say, continuing to do your own recovery work allows you to grow in self-confidence and competence, which then lets you choose to take some risks if and when the trust actually starts to settle back in. So the focus is, the focus in the second question is on, man, it's still pretty early. I can see good things happening. I want to be able to lean in a little bit. I'm going to lean in at the level I have, one, the self-confidence to do so, and two, my gut says it's safe to do so. So the second focus, the question on the second question is really more on continued assessment of where our trust and loyalty is actually at, giving myself permission and space to continue to grow in that, and then systematically leaning myself back in with, it'll probably be some work. It'll be a struggle for to do that. That is the mess. That is the messy middle.
You know, Tyler, it's interesting because, like you say, it's perfectly fine to want that passion. It's perfectly fine to want that excitement. I think the thing to really look at is the driving factor, is the impetus for wanting it. Are you wanting it and wanting to be desired because you are getting your self-worth from that?
It'll make you good enough.
Yeah, you'll throw trust out the window or whatever your values are when it comes to a relationship because you're so intoxicated by being desired that you'll live in limerence and it burns really hot really fast. And there's three stages of limerence: infatuation, crystallization, and deterioration. It doesn't last. It comes and it goes, and then
it's like
and
its
then
own
you're
drug.
Left. Yeah, you're left betrayed, abandoned, and rejected. And the very thing that you were trying to use that person for in order to feel okay about yourself, the very thing, your biggest fear has come true now. And on the other end of it, what you brought up, and I think trust is the kind of underlying factor here that needs to be there in a healthy relationship. If it's just obsession and objectification, that's one thing. If it's just, I won't put myself out there because I'm not going to give trust a chance and I'm just going to independently protect myself forever, then you won't have that trust and safety. And so the answer is to understand real recovery. And real recovery means two partners can come to the table honest, vulnerable, empathetic, and consistent with each other. And so they know each other. And when they know each other and that safety is there, it's way better than limerence. It's way better than that. Because when you mix trust with that passion, you can't really describe what that's like.
Yeah, it's an emotional thing that doesn't have a lot of words to it.
It's love.
Right. No, there's a lot of relationships there where, you know, maybe they do have the other parts of love nailed down. They've got security and loyalty and they have friendship, but maybe, you know, I don't consider myself a naturally passionate person, right?
I've seen you passionate about some things. call a bad foul in basketball, you flip out.
that's not what I mean. It's like it takes work for me in the area of passion in my relationship to keep that alive a lot more than the work. Like the friendship part comes pretty naturally for me, but the actual passion part in our relationship takes, this makes it sound so non-passionate that I have to put in my phone reminders like, do this thing tomorrow, or these are some things that Rhiannon really likes, or
dang, that's, you know, sexy.
Like, yeah. right. Like, but because it doesn't come naturally, I have to work hard at that part of our, if we're looking for the triangle, the consummate love, I have to make conscious effort. And so if I'm a partner that's listening to this and saying, yeah, we do have safety and trust and we do have some good friendship, but we don't really have a lot of that. Well, here's your call to action then. Like, you go work on it, go develop it, put some time and energy into that. Because you already have the bones of a great relationship. Otherwise, you're just going to add more savor to it by pursuing that.
You know, Tyler, as you're talking, it's interesting because you'd think that the passion and the good sex and all that stuff kind of follows, right? That's the result of. But I've actually worked with couples where they rely on that and they don't have the other, where it's like that's how they connect, but then they don't have the other stuff going on. And those relationships aren't healthy either.
No, it scares them to death when they come into our office, and that's what is holding them together is their sex life and their passion life. They have fatuous love, but they don't have anything under the surface.
Yeah.
And then you or I, like a therapist, is like, you know what we need to do? We need to take like a 30 or 90 day sex fast.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, that's like the end of the world, because they don't know if their relationship can survive putting the effort into the friendship and the loyalty without that piece.
Yeah.
It's actually a crisis for some of the couples that we work with.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is a really interesting discussion, Tyler, because it shows just the complexities of healthy attachment in relationships. It seems like, and this, we've talked about this a lot, but it seems like if I'm working on myself and I'm being the healthiest version of me emotionally and spiritually, physically, and my partner is too, and we do love each other and we want to be together, that we'll naturally start to do these things that you're talking about to create this consummate love. We'll naturally do that because we're healthy unto ourselves in order to create that. When I'm not, and I'm leaning a little too hard on my partner, or I'm pushing too far away, then I can't create that consummate love. And then we fall into areas of survival, of you know, just supporting each other through life or whatever it is, and feeling resentment or feeling a lack of what I truly desire in terms of love in my life.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I would add to that, Brannon, that if there's been a breach in some way, or there's some part that's missing, we'll naturally want to start leaning that way, but it will take intentional effort and action to build the habits that haven't been established for whichever parts of that relationship that we need to continue to build. And there needs to be room to make that intentional action and have it be a little bit messy and maybe not be perfect, and to develop like almost like a muscle. It needs to have time and space to develop with intentional action, like a muscle.
And something's you know, when a relationship breaks down, when there's an affair, when something bad happens, sometimes divorce is the right answer. Sometimes just ending the relationship is absolutely the right thing to do. But when a couple chooses to say, okay, we're going to work on this from here, they like something needs to shift in terms of what we've been talking about today in order to create actual love and fulfillment in your relationship. So the affair was an indicator, and I'm not blaming anybody here, but that something was off. Something was not working in that relationship, right? So you got to shift something back. And the way you shift something back is by looking within to say, okay, like, have I been overly codependent? Have I been independent in my relationship? What are the fears? What's the trauma? What's driving me to disconnect here? That's the work that I need to do so that I can cultivate this love again.
That's right. Exactly. That's exactly right. It's interesting because, you know, I think all of us, if we really think about it, like if I sit here and think about it and I was like, man, my wife is going to be doing this today and this today and this today just to chase me and like tell me I'm amazing. And like, I would love that. Right. So there is something.
That's not what's going to happen today.
there'll probably be some really good connection today, but not that. That's the point. The point to this is like when we think of like this idea of infatuation type love only without those other two pieces, it actually is it's counterintuitive and counterproductive to what we actually want in the big picture, because by the nature of it being all consuming and compulsive and usually one-sided, me towards you wanting that back. If I chase my wife around from a limerence only based perspective, she's going to love the attention for a little bit of time until she realizes that I have no inner strength for myself and that I'm reliant totally on her telling me I'm good enough. And then she's going to see me as weak and, you know, non-boundaried. And eventually that's going to go through those stages you talked about into that mm-hmm. like deconstruction of it, or what did you call it? Degeneration.
Yeah. Infatuation, crystallization, and deterioration.
Deterioration. So part of the deterioration process will actually be that, number one, and this is why we see in marriages happen all the time, if we've been sold a bill of like what love is through all of this culture that we've grown up in and every Disney movie we've ever watched, that love is infatuation or limerence. And the crazy thing is that limerence in most relationships can last anywhere from 2 to 7 years. And you don't think it's a wonder why the highest divorce rate happens in the first 7 years of marriage.
The 7 year itch.
Yeah. It's like, it's because people don't add in those other parts of relationship. And so when that wears off, you're left with two people looking at each other going like, hey, he seems weak and inadequate and non-boundary and not very strong. And he's over there going like, how come she doesn't look very attractive anymore? You know, and boom, they're going their other way instead of saying, that was the attractant for us to get together, and we needed to have nurtured our friendship and our loyalty with one another so that we could continue to cultivate passion in our relationship.
Yep. I really like what you just said, Tyler. And I don't think we talk about it enough when we talk about relationships, is just kind of that nurturing or cultivation in a relationship. You know, it's cliche, but couples that go on dates every week, that, what do you know? They have a lot better relationships. Couples that hold hands. Holding hands is so non-sexual, yet so connecting. Couples that pray together. And I could keep going down the list, but couples that nurture connection in all ways have more passion in all ways. And so if you're sitting back pissed off about your relationship and wanting something more, but not nurturing anything, then, you know, maybe your expectation is off a little bit.
Yeah. And that's counterintuitive to what we think love is, which is that it should be effortless and it shouldn't take work and you should just feel that way. When in reality, what we know is that the couples who actually have the best relationships, including the best sex long-term, they're in committed long-term relationships. And the way that they've gotten there is that they invest, they spend time and energy on their actual marriage.
Yep. And that marriage is unique and different than any other marriage because it has two unique individuals in it. And so how you cultivate that and how you nurture that is different than how your friends do or how your neighbors do in their marriage. You might connect and create together in some ways that are totally different or totally odd to some people, but you feel that connection together.
It's beautiful. Did we even answer the original questions, Brandon?
Well, I think we talked about what's the difference between limerence and love. I don't know if I'll ever use this word again, but I like it.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good concept. And I think the idea is that there is room for passion inside of relationships. Passion becomes more free and open when there's safety and trust over the long haul. Yeah. And when there's deep friendship that's added to that safety and trust, then that passion is like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's what we all desire.
Yeah.
And what we're all working for and looking for. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to those who are submitting questions. We noticed that we got a few others. We're trying to get through them, even though we have a hard time keeping up. Thank you for being a part of our show, for supporting us by listening, and hopefully you're getting something valuable out of it.
And until next time, keep on keeping on.